Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio, Steel Waves Radio, Apple, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, everywhere you listen to podcasts. It's a Dark Mark show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and my regular co-host Hannah is not here this week, but she did want to wish a happy birthday to, and this, I guess this is her gift to you. You get to co-host the show today. My former co-host, Nicole Sachs.
Hey, thank you for the happy birthday wishes.
Yes, everybody's a serious horror writer, the author of Some Fucked Up Shit, Some Fucked Up Shit Ghosts, and just dipping her toe in the movie industry.
And I was going to say, and you're a co-writer for a very own screenplay from the both of us.
We are working on a screenplay together, and we're talking to the right person. Is this guy not only a great musician on his own right, he's so overqualified to be on the show. Either I have a goth or industrial musician or FX artist or a director or a writer or an actor. He's done all these things. He's the lead singer I can't even talk. I can't even say your band right. Because I had a band called Symbol Six on my podcast, and I keep mixing your name up with them. The lead singer of System Sin. Yes. And the actor writer of the movie that I just saw today, Dry Blood, as well as many, many other things. I was just watching his new video, listening to his music, and I can't wait to talk to this guy. It's Clint Carney.
Thanks for having me on.
Say that again, because Nicole's got your spotlight on YouTube.
Oh, I said thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
And look at that apartment. Look at all the cool shit behind you. Forget about it. That's... I'm so envious.
Yeah, my backdrop's a white wall.
and Nicole, you were just about to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I met Clint when System Sin, been about 10 to 12 years ago now, when System Sin was touring Colorado with V&V Nation. And he was great. He just fucking killed it. He's actually part of the reason I got a Facebook, was to keep up with them. So a long time ago.
I'm sorry.
You hear that, Clint?
Yeah, I'm sorry I made you get Facebook. No. But yeah, that was cool. It was a while ago. That was a fun tour with B&B.
And from Clint, I discovered Hyena Gallery and a whole bunch of awesome artists there, and also the band that's on his T-shirt there, Godmod.
Yes.
Great band.
I also used to play keyboards in this band and sung a couple songs for them too.
I was gonna mention that you've done that too. So Clint's the reason you found Hyena Gallery? I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, he had an art show there. Besides being an amazing musician and having his own movie, Clint also is a fine artist. Like, he uses oil in ways that you can only imagine. He's so good.
I forgot to mention that, too, because I do like your art as well.
Thank you.
Before we get going and kiss Clint's ass too much, I got to get our sponsors real quick. We've got Audible still sponsoring us.
Woohoo.
audibletrial.com/DMS. You get a free book and a free Audible Originals, or two free books or two free Audible Originals. Everybody's going crazy because they have now, one of the Audible Originals is an authorized audiobook of the Sandman comic.
Yes.
Neil Gaiman narrates it. James McAvoy plays Dream. It's definitely, people are going crazy. People love it. And this is an all-star cast. Also, since Clint, in addition to everything else, apparently all show business revolves around him. He worked with David Fincher on Gone Girl, and David Fincher directed Alien 3, but he did not direct the script that William Gibson wrote, cyberpunk writer. So what Audible did is they took that script, got Michael Biehn, Lance Henriksen, and an all-star cast, and that's an Audible original. You can see what Alien 3 could have been if they used William Gibson's script. Any book you want. They have everything from Shakespeare to Smut. Just go to
By the way, I've also met Lance Henriksen back when he had a comic book, because I met a lot of people in my comic book days. And he's a wonderful, I think his book was called Not Bad for a Human. He's a wonderful human. Just a really great guy.
I met him in Monsterpalooza once. He's very nice. And although he's right next to Virginia Madsen, so I was a little distracted. But anyway, go to audibletrial.com/DMS. Also, we got so many sponsors now, Nicole, I can't even keep up. Doomy's Home Cooking, please support local business.
They're open right now. I already asked Bill. There's outdoor seating. Mark, we should go.
Let's go. Birthday dinner on me.
All right, yay.
Yes, we'll have to figure out when, but it's Taco Tuesday today. But Doomy's Home Cooking is 1253 Vine Street. There's also one in Culver City and one in Toronto, Canada. The best vegan food you ever had.
If you're vegan and you want to celebrate Taco Tuesday, they also have tacos, right? They got the Mexican place next door?
Yes, they do. And their nachos were voted one of the 10 best nachos in L.A., the only one without meat, by the L.A. Weekly. And we also, if you're watching us on YouTube or you listen to us on a podcast, catcher, look at the description here or follow us on at Dark Mark Show on all social media. We have 20% off Hustler Hollywood.
Woohoo!
Get all your
vibrators. That's where I get my fishnets.
Or fishnets or dick pills, whatever you want. 20% off. No, not that, you know, Clint or I would need anything of that. Whatever you want. Well, you've got everything from lingerie to just anything that you need for a good time. Lube.
Buy me fishnets and call it a birthday present.
Right. Well, if you get 20% off and a free gift, you go to Hustler Hollywood.
Everybody
listening to the show, buy Nicole some fishnets. And I'll tell
you. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, I'll tell you where to ship them. Also, Spy Associates. You never know who's spying on you. You don't know who's. You may want to spy on somebody. They've got GPS trackers, bug detectors. They have cameras that fit in smoke detectors. A lot of James Bond stuff. 20% off any order over $250. And Nicole will tell you the last sponsor. And real quick, I know energy drinks. I've tried them all.
That's true.
There's been energy drink companies that have solicited me to be a sponsor, and I waited till the best. Here's the best right here. Raise energy drink. I got mine right here. Get a case like I did. Put DMS in the coupon code. You get 15% off any order of Raise energy drink or anything at Rep Sports. This is voodoo flavor. The great thing about these zero sugar, this is not the crap you get at 7-Eleven. You get these at gyms. GNCs online, the zero calories, zero carbs, zero sugar, zero crash.
Does that say voodoo on top of it?
Yes, that's right. This is the.
It's a goth energy drink.
Voodoo. It's very goth. I got the voodoo. It's like a fruit punch. Little.
Delicious. I was going to ask what voodoo tasted like.
It's like fruit punch. They've got, but they get. They also have the best flavors. They've got. Sour gummy worms. I was a little skeptical, and I tried it. Great. They have Baja limes, just like Baja Fresh at Taco Bell. Galaxy Burst. They've got all sorts of great flavors. Voodoo's my favorite. Go to Raise Energy Drinks and get 15% off. So enough selling out. Clint Carney is here. Now, Clint, were you born and raised in L.A.?
I was. Yeah, I was born in Northridge.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains a lot. That explains all the heads behind you and and the macabre imagery. No, you were raised in the Valley. You were raised in Northridge. Wow, that's so you're the one native.
Yeah, I'm the only one that never left. I've lived in all different parts of L.A. over the years, but I've never left L.A. County.
And why would you want to?
But I've never not lived anywhere other than L.A. County.
You say, well, if you want to, there's a whole mass exodus, Nicole. I don't know if you're aware of this.
I know. Everybody's going to Vegas. I went on a date with a guy, and, like, he's looking at a house in Vegas. And I'm like, well.
Well, and I'll be honest with you. The reason is because of the pandemic. A lot of things that you would enjoy in L.A. you can't enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, I got out of the Valley last year and moved to Los Feliz. And, you know, half the things that are, you know, the great restaurants, the art places, you know, you can't go. You can't go to Hyena Gallery. You can't go to the Getty Center. You can't go to movie theaters or you know, you can't go to concerts. It sucks. Yeah. But anyway, so people are like, well, you might as well go to Iowa. It's the same stuff. Everybody's like eating outdoors in restaurants.
It is not. Everybody's have a little patience.
Okay, yeah. Well, no, everybody's going to move back.
You said Iowa. I was going to say Ohio does have a great like metal and goth scene out there. So
yeah, so just look for a metal and goth. But anyway, we digress. Now, is Carney your real name or is that a stage name?
It is my real name.
Okay, and so it's basically a question. What did your folks do? Were they in show business?
My dad was a cop and my mom sold Avon.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, that's my real last name.
Officer Carney.
Yep.
And so, which begs the question, because I just watched your movie, Dry Blood. We might as well get into that, because there's an antagonist. And have you seen the movie, Nicole?
I actually haven't. That makes me a terrible friend. I'm sorry, Clint, but I do listen to all your music regularly.
No, it's a terrific movie. Now,
I'll watch it. I promise. I'll get my friend Luis together. We'll have a night of it.
Sweet. Thanks.
But it's on Tubi now, as well
on
as
Tubi.
Amazon.
Yeah.
Or buy it on Amazon or Apple, and you know, maybe you'll make a little bit more money than, you know, my doing. But you, first off, you're the star of the movie, but you didn't want to be the star. You just wrote the movie.
Yeah, I didn't have any plans to be in it. It's a lower budget film, and once we discovered that we really couldn't afford to go SAG with it, the director thought I had a good, Kelton Jones is the director, he thought I had a good grasp of the character just from having written it, and he asked if I would play the role. So I asked him to, you know, kind of audition me first, and then if he liked my performance, then we would go forward with it. And thankfully he did, and then as revenge, I asked him to play the cop in the film, and
nice.
The rest is history. But it worked out good. You know, had we cast other people, it probably wouldn't have done as much for our film careers, even if we weren't on camera as well. So I'm happy I did it, and I certainly learned a lot during the process of making it. And
won a lot of awards at various horror conventions.
Yeah, we did okay on the indie film circuit with the festivals. Yeah, we got some best films, some best directors, some best acting awards, and it was very surprising.
Yeah, let me synopsize the film for you, Nicole. Clint plays, and this is why I wanted to see how autobiographical it is, and hearing that your father's a cop, now I'm really curious. This is about a young man who's trying to get off drinking and drugs, and he...
Okay.
Parents apparently own a cabin in a small town in the mountains, and it's off season, it's summer. So he goes up to, or is it, you own it with your ex-wife?
Anyway, yeah.
He owns a cabin. So he's going to go and dry out, and he's tormented by a police officer. He has an ex-girlfriend that goes up to assist him, and he basically loses his mind.
Okay.
And I'll leave it at that.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds good.
But the cop is always there. He's always antagonizing you. Tell me this wasn't based on your father.
Oh, it wasn't. Absolutely not. No.
I was going to say, your parents must be very understanding, because, you know, I mean this with a compliment, you came out quite goth, you know? Like, you're pretty extremely goth.
Yeah, no, the film's not autobiographical at all. I write a lot, and that was just one of the scripts that I had written. But my dad did come on board to help as a technical advisor for Kelton, who was the director and who was playing the cop, just to, you know, advise on, you know, everything, the action and all that sort of stuff, how a cop would behave and react to certain things. So that knowledge was... invaluable for the film.
Right. And I was surprised to see that our mutual friend Jamie Valentine of the band Cindergarten plays your ex-girlfriend. Now, did you guys date in the past? Is this another autobiographical thing?
No. When my wife and I first moved to, when we moved to Valley Village, which was shortly before we got married, mm-hmm. Jamie had, how did we know each other? She was the roommate of my first roommate when I was younger. Convoluted story. And then when my wife and I moved to Valley Village, she was living right down the street. We became friends. She ended up joining my band for a tour. And she was in System Sin music video with me.
Right.
That the director of Dry Blood was the director of photography on. And so when we were looking to cast the movie, we all kind of just thought of her because, you know, she's, we really enjoyed working with her on the music video, and that's kind of how that all came about.
Yeah, another video I would recommend. Cool. It's And she's so beautiful that, like, as part of the video, you don't see her face, and she's still hot. So it's so weird. Like, you obscured her nose and mouth, and I think it was the – you don't see the face, but it's still like, wow, who's that? But it's great that you guys both de-gothed and played kind of just regular people, sort of hipstery. Not even hipstery, just regular, I guess, big city folk in a small town.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
while the convenience store clerk was wearing a shirt of your band.
Yeah, there's lots of little
Easter eggs.
Yeah, there's Easter eggs all throughout the movie, just little hidden nods to other projects and things like that. So of course we gave him a System Sin shirt. At one point in time, he's wearing a shirt for one of his old podcasts as well in another shot. So.
Nice.
To cut in, Clint also has, for Scream 4, the Hyena Gallery artists all made little Easter eggs and put in these little paintings of the Ghostface Killer and stashed them all over the barn scene in Scream 4. So Clint was part of that too.
No, I know. Clint's been part of a lot of movies besides Scream
4. Yes, he has.
Was that the first big movie that you were involved in? Because I know you worked with Oliver Stone, you worked on Gone Girl, you worked on the ill-fated Fantastic Four.
To be honest, I was looking at my IMDb and I saw Fantastic Four in there and I couldn't even remember what the fuck I did for it. But my IMDb has like less than half of the shit that I've worked on in there. So a lot of times I'll just make one specific prop or I'll do some kind of graphic for something and it just all kind of blends together in the end. But yeah, Scream 4 was actually the first major film that I had worked on. At the time I was, moonlighting as a tattoo artist. And one of my clients is my buddy, Skip Crank, who's a prop mm-hmm. master, and he was working on Scream 4, and that's how he got me and Hyena Gallery and a lot of the other artists there involved in that. And then it snowballed from there. I ended up doing the next movie he did with him was a Cameron Crowe film called We Bought a Zoo, and he brought me onto that, and then somehow it turned into a career of sorts.
Yeah. By the way,
yeah.
If you're goth, you have to go to Hyena Gallery in Burbank. There is so much art there, and all the artists are so fantastically talented. Some of Skip's works there, too. So it's just...
Is it open now?
I don't think it's open right now.
It's not open now, but their website, which is hyenagallery.com, H-Y-A-E-N-A, gallery.com. They've got all the art for sale on there, and it's a great...
They sell it worldwide, too, from online. Like, mm-hmm. It's very popular over in the Nordic states.
Yeah.
I guess it's an inside joke between the two of you. I don't get that, but...
Places you would go where, there's heavy metal and people that are very extremely goth.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Death metal sensibilities.
Yeah.
Anyway, so growing up in Northridge, in the Valley, what was your first love as far as artistically? Was it drawing? Was it music? Was it direction? Was it act? Was it acting? What was it? You did so many things.
I only lived in Northridge till I was six, and then I lived in the Antelope Valley for a while in Baldale, and then moved to Hollywood, and then I jumped all around LA County, three different parts of my life. But I think my first love was drawing and painting. I fell in love with horror just right away, even as a little kid.
What was the horror movie that did it? What was the first?
The first horror movie I saw was The Blob with Steve McQueen. The
nice.
My dad was into horror, but into, horror from when he was a kid. So,
sure.
A lot of the giant monster movies, things like that. His favorite movie is Them, about giant ants. So like that type of stuff was my first introduction into the genre. And my dad is an artist as well. And my uncle was a horror author. And I have one of my other uncles and cousins are also professional artists. And I just kind of grew up around that creativity and horror at the same time.
That's awesome.
It all turned into this.
So you have an artistic family, but the immediate family was very practical, very, the cop and,
my dad likes the, old horror stuff, and he's into building models, which got me into, building, practical stuff, which
sure.
My prop making over the years. But yeah, not no one was as hardcore into horror as I am, except for my late uncle Bill, who's big into horror. So.
Nice.
And then, so when did music? When did you start? Who inspired you musically when you were a kid?
You know, oddly, I didn't.
You weren't into music?
I didn't care about music at all until I got to high school. Like, I just didn't listen to it. It's weird. I don't know. I think I just, my brain developed late in life. But once I got into high school, I ended up getting into, you know, a lot of punk rock and then shortly thereafter, industrial music. And I had some friends who were musicians, and I ended up finding a guitar at a garage sale for $5. And I bought it.
That's a good garage sale.
Yeah, it was awesome. And my friend Jake Romero at the time was a guitar player. He started teaching me how to play. I started playing Guitar World, and then I just really liked writing music. And then I ended up getting a job and saving up and buying a keyboard, and it all spiraled out of control. And from there,
because you are System Sin, you do on the record, you do everything.
Yeah, in the past, I've had guest musicians come in to do things, but for the most part, you know, by and large, I write and perform all the instruments.
Like Prince, like Trent Reznor, like other people.
I'm nowhere near their skill set, but...
I was going to say, I like the Trent Reznor comparison, actually.
In that they write their own music, sure.
I'm sure there's some shitty musicians I can think of that do all their own instruments, but they're just not coming to mind right now.
Prince music's good. Like, I still remember how cool, it was really a cramped and sweaty room, and I remember how good that your band was. Like, I don't usually just go to talk to like the opening band after an act, especially when I'm there to see Deviation. But you guys were great.
Thank you.
I think I might have even bought something. I don't remember. That was too long ago.
No, I've been listening. I listened to the record that just came out, Once Upon a Second Act, and I really, really like it. I wish there were goth clubs around so I could go on the dance floor and dance to this.
I wish they played him in more goth clubs. Like, seriously.
They play him more than you would think, because I know I've heard your music in goth clubs.
Right. I'm just comparing it to Bar Sinister, where I haven't heard him played there yet.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that maybe at, like, The Lash or one of the other
ones. We've performed it at Bar Sinister a lot.
Yes, you did.
So that's, that makes up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it does suck that there's no clubs happening at the moment, but I totally understand why, and I totally back them not being open right now. But the cool thing that you're seeing is this, whole wave of all these great DJs that you normally have to go to a club to watch, you know, all throughout the country and the world, in fact. And now you can watch them do their sets online. So that's been cool just to reconnect with DJs around the world, watching them online at least.
You used to do a live painting thing called Art Autopsy. Are you going to do any virtual parties yourself?
I every once in a while I will just do a spontaneous live painting on Facebook, just for fun. So I'll probably do more of those. I don't know. My schedule is just so full these days. It's hard to commit to like a reoccurring thing every week or every month, like that. But certainly, on Facebook or it's maybe even Instagram, I'll pop on and do some live painting. You know, for the most part though, painting is like, it's like a very personal thing for me, and I like to just be alone to do it. And so having a camera behind me, it's fun, and I enjoy interacting with people as I do it, but I personally enjoy the process more as just a personal thing. So that's why I just don't do it all the time.
Does it creep you out when people are watching your paintings?
No, it was weird at first. I used to host a live art event also at Hyena Gallery, which is the Art Autopsy thing that Nicole mentioned. And so that the first time we did that, just having people come in and look over my shoulder and have it live streamed, you know, maybe a little weird, but you get used to it pretty quick.
I was still a reporter then, so I took all sorts of pictures too.
I actually, before we even did the Art Autopsy, I was part of an art collective that a great oil painter named Cam Rackerman started. And me, him, and a bunch of other really cool artists, Christopher Ulrich, Ted Von Hyland, Chris Sapp, and I'm missing a ton of names there. But we would go and do like these horror conventions or tattoo conventions, and we'd just set up big, you know, 6-foot-tall canvases, and we would do these, you know, paint battles where we, two of us would work on a canvas at a time and just, you know, painting and painting over each other. And so that was, I guess, my first step into the live art world. After that, I guess doing it online wasn't quite so bad.
Now, Nicole, you went to see BMV Nation and Clint opened up. Mm-hmm. Were you in touch with him the whole time when you went to Colorado, when you moved to LA, or was there a gap?
Well, like I said, he's not the reason I got a Facebook, but it was one of the final straws, because I've been telling people I needed a Facebook and I knew it, but I know it's shocking now, but I was really shy. So I know now I have this huge internet following, but back then I only had like 300 people on my Facebook. Like, I was just first starting off with what I was doing, but I was keeping up with his art because he was the only person I knew in California when I came out here. Besides, I knew James Wan, Darren Lynn Boozman, Mike Mendez, and mm-hmm. Eli Roth. And so they were called the Splat Pack back then. They all had made scary movies, and you could contact them through the MySpace days. I much preferred MySpace. I was on that with all the horror directors were on MySpace.
We all prefer MySpace, but that's, what are you going to do?
And so
when did you reconnect with Clint?
Well, Hyena Gallery, he was throwing an event and I wanted to meet new people. And so I went there and I just fell in love with the gallery. Like I said, if you're goth, you have to go there.
And did you put two and two together? Did you know it was Clint from?
Yeah, I knew it was him. He advertised an event or something. Either I think it was an art show that he was going to be in. By the way, Guillermo del Toro like shops there. It really is like this. It's one of my oldest places I went to, because I went there pretty soon after I moved out to California. The only other place I'd been was James and Mike took me to a party in the hills. So everything I was doing, that was right before I started becoming a journalist and reporting for like Dark Horse and all that. Mm-hmm. So I was just going off of whatever I saw in my feed. And in my feed, I saw that Clint had an art show. So I went there to go meet everybody. And it's a really welcoming community of artists.
That's great. So what is it about his art that differentiates him from other artists?
Well, first off, it is really difficult to paint at his skill level. Like, I wish you had some to like flash on the screen. Maybe I'll post one.
I'll flash something on the screen. with Clint's permission, I'll flash it on the YouTube screen.
You should. I'm sure he would be fine with that. Are you fine with that, Clint?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, and when you see it, it's so detailed and it's so. If you're a horror lover of any kind, you'll just like his work. It's very visceral.
It's not for everybody. it's pretty graphic.
There's a painting that I don't mean to bring Jamie up again, but I think it's her like chopping your head off. Is that a painting I saw?
She has been in a couple of paintings. I don't know.
There's one where she's, yes, it's pretty graphic.
Oh, I don't think she chopped my head off, but I think I know which one you're talking about, and that's my friend Sue in Glass. And did the girl have dreadlocks in it?
Yes.
Yeah. Her name's Sue, and her husband Glass. She's sawing his head off.
But he kind of looks like you, and she kind of looks like her. Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Similar haircuts, yeah.
Yeah, his paintings are amazing, and he can make them actually pretty fast. When he was doing Art Autopsy, he'd paint like one, and then he'd paint over it, and he'd just keep painting over it throughout the show.
Right. And I'm just curious how you got into props and prop making. I see that's a Scream, you did a painting, but how did you get into prop making for movies?
Yeah, so again, my friend Skip, who's the artist, got me on the Scream, and then he brought me on to We Bought a Zoo. And on that movie, there's a kid in the film, and I am sorry, I'm forgetting the actor's name.
That's okay. No, I saw it. I do want to check it out, but and I'm sure it's pretty good. But
it's good, yeah. And Cameron Crowe's a great director. Matt Damon is in it, and he plays Matt. It's Matt Damon's son, and he's an artist in the film. And so I did the kid's art that's on screen. So I was on set every day, just kind of drawing stuff and swapping it out as they needed it. But then, I had a big prop team, and I ended up meeting a lot of other great prop guys on that film: J.P. Jones, Michael DiMaggio, David Saltzman. Anyway, just a wonderful art department. And I ended up making some props just because I was there, really, when I wasn't drawing, I wasn't doing fuck all else. So they just had me start doing some stuff, and I had a lot of fun with it. And then just separately, all of those different prop dudes that worked on that film, they all hired me for the next thing that they went on to after that. And then it just kind of sprawled. So I ended up, I like building stuff. I like sculpting or engineering, how, you know, something mechanical works, things like that. So, they, you know, they would ask if I knew how to make something, and I would say, sure. And then just figure it out. And then that kind of, that's what got me into the business.
So what props did you make for Gone Girl, for instance, the David Fincher?
So in there, Ben Affleck's character gets these wooden rod puppets for an anniversary gift. And then the control rod, you know, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, but the control rod that controls the puppets ends up being the murder weapon in the film. So I built those puppets, and they're actually functional too. There's a rod in there, the thumb switch, and you know, they move the ROMs up and down and stuff.
So it's a functional murder weapon.
Yeah. But one of the coolest things about that movie is that I got to work with my sister on it, actually. She sewed the costumes for the puppets. So,
oh, that's great.
So that was cool, just to get to work with her on that. So that was the main thing. I love Fincher, and it was great to work on one of his films. Unfortunately, I never got to meet him, but...
I would imagine that happened. So did you meet Oliver Stone when you worked on Savages?
Nope. very rarely. Most of my work I just do from, you know, on set. So very rarely am I actually on set. So with We Bought a Zoo, that was an exception. I was there the whole time, and I got to meet Cameron Crowe. He was super nice. I was on set for 2 or 3 weeks of Star Trek Into Darkness. Still didn't get to meet J.J. Abrams, though. But
right. Well, what's it like being on a Star Trek set?
Fucking awesome. Yeah, it was cool. I got to see the...
You on the Enterprise and the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was on a soundstage in Marina Del Rey or Playa Vista, one of those places. It's on a big soundstage, and so, yeah, I got to see the bridge for the Enterprise, which is super cool, and then the scene that I was working on, the opening scene of the film is, like, on this alien planet where Kirk steals the scroll, and there's all these aliens chasing him, so I built that scroll and all the alien weapons for that first scene on the volcano planet.
That's awesome.
And people don't realize that everything that's in a movie, it's somebody's working on this. Every little prop, every little thing, a lot harder work doing something.
Well, the crazy thing is, if you think about this, if you just look at take Star Trek, for example, you look at the end credits of that film, there's probably 1,000 or more names on it. I worked on that film from pre-production for about, I think, 3 months, and then 2 or 3 weeks on set, and my name isn't even in the credits, which tells you something about the amount of people that it actually takes to make a film like that. In terms of, if you look at the sheer number of people that are credited and think about how many people weren't on top of that, you know, it's a lot of people to make a big film like that. It's super cool to be involved with it.
And you've also, are you going to, you've written a movie, you've acted in it, you've directed music videos. I like the videos that you've directed. I really like the title track of your new album and the video that comes along with it.
Thank
you. I also watched you directed a video for a band, Alice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really like that song in that video too.
Thanks.
Was it all animated?
All animated. I had so the singer from Alice is my current keyboard player in System Sin, and. Mm-hmm. She's in another band called Mankind is Obsolete.
Right.
Which, and that band has my drummer from System Sin is from that band too.
Yeah.
John Siren. Anyway, so Tosh has this other project, Alice, and we had originally planned to do a music video together pre-pandemic, and then the pandemic hit, and it just, you know, there weren't sound stages weren't open. It wasn't safe to get in a room with everybody. So I just asked, you know, if it would be okay if I just made a cartoon music video, and thankfully they were on board with that, and I hired my friend, also fellow Hayman Gallery artist, Kat Philbin, did all the wonderful illustrations that are in that video, and then I took her illustrations and I animated them.
That's awesome.
That's great. And so just skipping ahead, so you got a guitar, you got a keyboard, and then how did you, since you're doing everything yourself, how did you get the band together? How did you did you just send out demos or?
Well, I bought a four track. Not to date myself here, but yeah, I recorded the first album on a four track.
Well, this was way back in 2003,
2004. In the 90s.
Oh, it was in the 90s? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clint was around a long time before I heard about him. Other people were like, you didn't know about System Sin? I was like, no, I didn't know about System Sin.
I ended up writing six or seven albums first and just shopping them around, sending them out to every label under the sun. Virtually no reply and stuff. And then in 2003, I brought on my friend Ted Phelps from the band Imperative Reaction, which I've also been a live member of over the years, and he produced a new album for me at the time called Premeditated, and that was the album that got me signed. So we signed to a smaller label out of Florida called Sector 9 Studios, which was run by the Jason Banger from God Module and Alex from a band called Negative Format. They were running this label, and then they got me signed to Out of Line Records in Europe, and then from there I moved on to Metropolis, and you know, everything, the rest is history, I guess, as they say. But early on, I found that I liked writing music, and I wasn't good at it, but I liked it anyway, so I just kept churning out these shitty albums, and, but I had no desire to play live, ever, like, because I was a shy kid, and, wasn't much of an exhibitionist or anything like that. So the idea of playing live was kind of terrifying, but I went to see, this was also, probably my junior or sophomore year in high school. Kim Lab was touring with Sister Machine Gun, and their opening band was a band called Drill. And I went to go see those guys live, and all the bands were fantastic, but I was a huge, like, Kim Lab was like my number one band at the time. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Of course. They're
a great, cool band. And Jared, the singer from Kim Lab, was just hanging out beside the venue. I think it was, I can't remember, the Roxy or one of those.
You know, right.
Something strip clubs. Not strip clubs, but clubs on the
Sunset. So Sunset Strip.
Right.
Yeah. And Jared was hanging out front, and me and my friend James just went up and started talking to him. It was so cool. And I asked if they were going to play a song that I was really into at the time. And he was like, we'll think about it. And I was up front the whole time, and they ended up closing the show with that song. And he held the microphone out in front of me and my friend to sing the last chorus of it. And as a 16-year-old kid, or how old I was, 16, 17 at the time, I just thought that was the fucking coolest thing ever. And that was the moment, that was the switch. Well, fuck, I'm going to play live after all. I want to do that someday to some kid and, like, you know, make his fucking year, you know. So, so that's what got me into playing live, Kim Lab. So thank you, Jared, if you're watching.
Thanks, Jared. But you sing, you play all instruments, and you're telling me you initially did not want the spotlight on yourself?
You know, no, I still don't, in a way. The fucked up thing is, like, I love making art for a living, I love doing music for a living, because it's not work, it's just, I'm just having fun, and I get paid for it, which is super fucking cool. But unfortunately, the sad byproduct of it is, if you want to make a living doing any of that shit, you've got to be a little bit in the public eye, otherwise no one hears of you. You know, see, if there was a way for me to make music and art for a living and never have to leave my fucking house or for anyone to know who I was, I would prefer that, honestly. That's
I mean, the alternative is to get a singer and just be the guy in the back. A lot of
the
people
producer.
Do that.
Yeah, but...
No, I do like your voice. It's obviously the obvious influence is David Bowie, but who else were you influenced by?
I mean, there are a lot of musicians that have influenced me over the years in terms of their songwriting or lyrically or stuff like that. I can't really say anyone's influenced my voice in particular, because that's just how I sound. It's just my voice. I don't try to emulate anyone there. It's just, that's how I sound when I sing.
Right.
But I, But yeah, I mean, just countless musicians have influenced the way I write. You know, I listen to a lot of stuff that is not inside the genre. I listen to a lot of, a lot of classical, a lot of Baroque, a lot of folk music, classic rock, hip hop, and industrial and stuff too. You know, I listen to a lot of different things, and I think even though, you know, I can't really say, okay, this song is directly influenced by this band or that band, I think it all seeps in over time. And I think anyone creating any kind of art, just those influences worm their way into your brain and come out in what you're creating.
Well, I ask every musician this, and I've never gotten a good answer. Hopefully, I finally will get this. Who is an artist or a song that you like that nobody would ever guess? What's a guilty pleasure for you?
I will say I don't have any guilty pleasures because I if I like something, I'll just fucking say I like it, you know?
Right.
I don't really care if it's cool or not. But I think when a lot of people, if people come over to the house and I'm like in the middle of working on something and they hear listening to, you know, classical music. Sorry, I got it. Okay. Someone came to join me. So.
Aww. Aww. You got a cat.
This is Sally. One of two.
Yes.
I've been really into...
As if you couldn't get more goth. Have a cat jump on your lap.
Well, I'm also... You can't see it from this angle, but I also have a ton of real human skulls behind me, too. So.
Oh, no, I can see all sorts of things behind there. There's Freddy, there's Pumpkinhead, there's all sorts of stuff behind you.
I just fucked up my camera. An artist I've been really into lately, when I was working on this album, in fact, there were a couple artists that I was listening to a lot. One is Galen Lee, who is just like this phenomenal violin playing folk musician, and she uses a lot of loops with her violins, and she just has a really amazing, unique voice. I really recommend her stuff. And then Phoebe Bridgers, who just released, I think, her second or third album this year. But her album, Stranger in the Alps, I was listening to that like nonstop when I was writing this album too. So those have been some recent musical influences that if you listen to them, you won't find a trace of them in my music. But
I really dig it. Yeah, I like Spice Girls. I don't give a shit what anyone says. But
there you go.
As I said, I listened to the new album. Now, this is other than the soundtrack, because you did the soundtrack for the movie for Dry Blood. Mm-hmm. And how was that? Is that the first soundtrack you ever did?
That was, I think, the third soundtrack I did. I contributed songs to different movies over the years, but that was the third one. But the first two were a lot different because I had my friend Tony Dublin, who was an indie filmmaker, had made some lower budget stuff, and he had picked a couple songs that I had written that he had liked, and I just did variations on those songs as the score. So this was the first one that was more of like a traditional scoring thing where the songs were custom written for those scenes and stuff. So it was a cool process. It was definitely a different method for working on music that way, because you already have something that a visual that's informing the music, and you're trying to write to either support what you're seeing or to provide a contrast to what you're seeing. So that was kind of cool.
Different skill set. Do you see yourself following in Danny Elfman and Trent Reznor's footsteps? And maybe since you're already knee deep in films anyway.
I would love to do more scoring. I've had a lot of fun doing it. I'll definitely probably end up scoring more of my own films.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to pay me to score a film, fuck yeah.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun.
Go ahead, that's all.
I was going to say, what are you working on right now?
Right now, I am getting ready to shoot a new music video, which will be shot this week. And I don't want to say what track it's for yet, because I've got a couple in the works, and I'm not sure which one's going to be done first. So that'll be a surprise. And then... one of the shows I work on, just props and graphics-wise, is a show called Blackish, and that started back up in production. So I'm doing some work with
them. I was wondering about that too. What props do you, looking behind you, I'm trying to figure out what props you do for the show Black-ish, which is a situation comedy.
Yeah, I've done a lot of sitcom work. I worked on the first four seasons of Black-ish, and then the last couple seasons, or season or two, I don't know how many they had in between, I was just busy with other productions and wasn't able to get on that. But now they just started back up pre-production. So,
well, what's a prop that you would do for Black-ish? Like, I'm trying to think.
Well, the very first thing I did for them, which is one of the early episodes, I think it was a Thanksgiving episode, was like a big rubber turkey. And it's been a variety of stuff. A lot of graphic work for any time one of the characters has like a show presentation, things like that. I don't think, I can't talk about this season yet because
of course
it aired, but there was one when Anthony Anderson had like these custom hangers in his closet that were just like his face and shoulders.
That's
built those. Awesome. It's always something random for any movie or TV show. But that show was really cool. I actually got to, they shoot it over at the Disney lot. I live in Burbank now, so it's right down the street. So I got to be on the set a few times on there. And it's a really, really cool show to work on. Lots of great people in the cast and crew. So.
Now, what possessed you? And where's the time go? When you started putting out records, well, actually, you started in the 90s and then saw the music industry Napster and dwindle away.
I mean, I was self-releasing bullshit in the 90s. I didn't have an actual record deal until 2004. So,
but even when you got it at Metropolis, they weren't throwing you the millions of dollars that they would have 5 years before.
I don't know if anyone's ever been throwing millions in the industrial scene. certainly if I gotten into the music industry in general, even on this indie level, 10 years earlier, I probably would be selling more records. But, that's the nature of the industry. You know, just the history of recorded music is so brief. It's a blip in human history. People started actually recording music and then selling it. And so, I feel like I rode the last wave of that, and I'm happy to have been a part of it. But,
it's been a while since your last record. It's been a while since your last record. Now you just came out with Once Upon a Second Act. So, A, I guess this is your second act. And B, what possessed you to come out with some music at this time?
I think it was roughly 6.5 years in between this and the last System Sin album. And I had been gradually working on stuff. I would start a new album, a new record, and then something else would come up. And it's one of those good problems. I want to make music, but I ended up just getting a lot of cool shit thrown at me.
Right.
Nice. Making movies and doing art and traveling and all kinds of cool shit. So I can't complain about that, but that stuff got in the way of making an album. But I got a big gig last year that afforded me the ability to take some time off of, making money to actually work on an album. And it just opened up a window for me to do that. And it was the right time. I've been wanting to do it for a while. And I thought, if I don't do it now, I didn't even know at this point, it had been so long, I didn't know if anyone would give a fuck about a new album, but thankfully seems like some people did.
Yeah. So,
awesome.
It was just the right time, events happened and then, the tail end, while my friend Ted Phelps, who I mentioned earlier, he came in to mix and master this album, which he's done for almost all of my albums. Mm-hmm. And by the time I brought him in, I think we were already in, pandemic mode. And so it's like, yeah, why not just fucking spend, take our time and just work on the post, the production and all that stuff at the end. So it worked out.
And it came out late June. So recently came out, and people do give a fuck, you think?
I was surprised. The other thing is I left my record label and I just went out on my own and did a self-release. was also just like, it felt like the right time to do it. I'd seen some friends do it before with some success. And I got their advice, and, you know, I just said, fuck it, I'll try it. And that was the other scary thing, is that, you know, I for the record, I love Metropolis Records. I love all the yeah. guys that work there. They're great. They've been great things for me as a band. And it was a little scary to not know how it would be without a label, if I could even let people know that the album existed. But I ended up finding, I used the same publicist that I worked on with at the end of the year with Dry Blood's Final Push, and he was great. With his help, I ended up, you know, just getting some good press with it. And so it's still picking up speed. You know, it's still, it's a slow build at this stage. I don't have like huge marketing dollars or anything, but just, you know, doing word of mouth and, you know, if people dig it, you know, just sharing it with their friends, that's been a big help. And then, you know, people like yourself,
are you going to tour it locally?
Have me on the show, you know, it's been,
well, Clint.
Are you going to tour it locally? Like, I'm sure that would help get the word out if you did like a little tour of California.
I would like to. I mean, I would love to do a big tour, but until everything with COVID is behind us,
no touring, no live venues.
Yeah, first of all, venues aren't open. But even if they were open right now, the last thing I would want to do would be have someone else get horribly sick because they came to one of my shows. So I'm going to firmly wait until it's absolutely as safe as it can be before I do that again.
That's good of you.
So you would have turned down the Sturgis gig if it came to you.
Yeah.
You heard about that, right, Nicole?
No, is there a big Sturgis concert?
Well, yeah, they had the Sturgis rally, and they had the concert.
Okay.
And they had tons of bands, but for some reason, Smash Mouth was the one that got all the bad publicity. They were like,
weird.
I can't believe Smash Mouth's putting people at risk. And they weren't the only band. Like, Jackal was there. I think ICP was there. I think Andrew Dice Clay played. I think it was a whole festival of bands. And thankfully, it doesn't look like a lot of people got sick relative to the crowd, but still.
But they're like, screw you, Smash Mouth.
You know, all those headlines were Smash Mouth puts people at risk. It's like, you know, first off, you know, if you're going to a Smash Mouth concert, that's natural selection. But I'm glad that it was a very low population that got sick, and I hope they all recover. But
yeah.
You know, and I don't know when we're going to be able to do live performance, you and me, Clint, or hopefully soon. But it doesn't look like 2020.
It doesn't look like in this year. Yeah, it looks like it'll be next year.
Yeah.
Plus, they're backed up. They have a lot of other people they have to still show. Like, a lot of stuff got canceled and shifted to next year, so it'll probably be a lot of competition.
Sure. Well, in the meantime, the break from live performances is a good chance for us to, keep our creative juices flowing and work on some more shit. So.
But were there System Sin fans that are surprised, like, that didn't know you had a record out and just kind of stumbled onto it?
I think so. Yeah. It's weird. I'm sure you both experience this too, but I tend to get into a bubble of the people that communicate with me on social media. And sometimes I think it's like, oh, fuck, those are the only people that listen to my music. And then but once I put out a new album, I realized, oh yeah, there's other people that don't follow me on social media that listen to it. So, it's cool just to kind of watch it spread around the internet and pop up on different shows.
Nice.
That's scary.
So. Well, and I don't know what the reviews are, but I'll give you my personal review. I think it's a terrific album. I was very impressed.
I think it's great too.
And,
thanks so much.
And I think especially the first video really got my attention. I thought it was great. And like I say, that's a track, which is a title track. And it's something that I could see, maybe not a Bar Sinister, but any other goth club blasting and people going crazy on the dance floor.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, thanks so much. That was so far, you know, fingers crossed, the reviews have shockingly all been good. which is new for me, because usually they're a mixed bag. But I think people took mercy on me. They're all, oh, fuck, if we wanted to release another album, we better not insult this
one. Right.
Yeah, if you don't get at least one mildly bad review, you're like, wait a second, something's not right here.
Something's wrong. Yeah. of course, I haven't read all the reviews in other languages, though, so maybe there's some bad ones out there.
Well, you're such a shy person, and it's coming across in this interview. When you started winning Best Actor prizes for Dry Blood, were you what did you think? Were you when you made your acceptance speeches? Were you?
I was very surprised, needless to say, and honored just that the kind folks at these festivals felt that way. Because honestly, we were playing against some pretty cool films with good and great performances in them, and so it's a big honor to get those awards, and definitely surprising. But I'm not. I'm okay with public speaking. So.
Okay. Are you going to be doing
it? It's not my favorite, but I can do it.
Any more acting in the future? Or the?
I acted in two movies last year that'll be coming out this year. Just small roles, just bit roles. I had some friends. I'll tell, if I can, I'd like to talk about those films.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
So I met a wonderfully talented filmmaker, Joe Badon, at a festival called Film Quest in Utah a couple years ago, and he was there with his editor, Joseph Estrada, and they had just done a film called The God Inside My Ear, and they had made it for just an incredibly low budget. I mean, I thought I had a low budget, but they did it for peanuts, and that was part of the marketing for their film, was how low the budget was, and I was like, right. No way you can make a good movie without that money. But I was curious, so I watched it, and it ended up being great. I loved it, and I don't know how they did it for that budget, but they pulled it off. It looked amazing, and I really enjoyed it. And I ended up talking to them after the festival or after the screening, and we hit it off. And then I just told them, "Well, look, I want to work with you guys on whatever you do next. Please think of me, because I would love to work with you." And I got a call from Joe when he had this script for this new film. It's called Sister Tempest. And it is one of the craziest, in an absolutely great way. It's just one of the craziest films you'll ever see. It was so ambitious. Also a low-budget film, but a little more than the last film he did. But the script was so great. It's just so crazy and fucking ambitious. And he asked me if I wanted to have a role in it, which I said yes. So last year I flew out to Louisiana to shoot that role. I play an angel that has like this weird iridescent glowing skin and has like three eyes. and I'm by far not the weirdest character in the film.
Okay, I was going to say
that sounds cool. Yeah.
so that was super fun. And then I did another movie in December. My friend Eric Middleman, who he's been in the film industry for a while. I've worked with him doing visual effects on some of his short film projects. And he was doing a film like I don't know. I don't know if it's been announced yet. I don't know. I can tell you specifics about this film yet. I can tell you the title, but I don't think I can say much beyond that because it's still early stages in their post-production. But it's called Escape from Area 51. It's just a really funny sci-fi comedy, B-movie that wears its B-moviness on its sleeve, and it's super fun. And I got to play a small role in there, and I did a scene. My scene in that film is with Kelton from Dry Blood, which was great. He wanted to get us both in that same scene together as like a Dry Blood reunion. And then... Donna Derrico from Baywatch is in the scene with us too, so that was real fun to get to work with her and some of so both of those films, I believe they will either be coming out this year or at least doing some kind of festival thing this year or whatever film festival.
Festivals, yeah. Well, yeah. That's pretty good. I saw the Escape from Area 51 on your IMDb, and the title just caught me, so I can't wait to see that. Can't wait to see all those.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Nicole to see Dry Blood. I can't wait.
Watch it as soon as possible.
Yeah. I can't wait for people to hear, if they have not heard, Once Upon a Second Act, which I think, it's funny because I lament a lot, where's the good goth industrial new stuff coming from? And I don't hear a lot of stuff that really impresses me, and this impressed me. So.
Oh, thank you.
But I've heard heard your stuff before, so it's not surprising that's still good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had been out of the genre for so long. I mean, just from not having released an album, I wasn't really familiar with a lot of the new bands in the scene. I put up a Facebook post like a couple months ago just asking people, what new bands are you listening to? And I got like, I don't know, fucking 100 replies of all these bands that I hadn't even heard of. So I spent a while just kind of going down the list of bands people have talked about and listening to a track or two. There's a lot of catching up I have to do.
Right. And do you really think, I think we're all just about to head in our second act. I think this is just, this COVID is just pausing everything. And, you know, past this prologue, it's, everything's from this point forward. Everybody's got a second act. So.
Yeah. I mean, the title and that song, that whole thematic thing all came about before COVID, but I think it definitely, resonates more with me.
Yeah. And what's the deal with the fish? Because it's always, you always got fish stuff going on.
Oh, just in that music video. I just had the idea for it. I just wanted this fucked up, weird mutant fish in it. With that music video, I was really diving into a great visual effects program called Blender. And it's got a sculpting part of this program where you can sculpt 3D models. And I said, you know what, I want this fish in there. I'm going to try just building it in this program.
Nice.
And, so that was my first kind of three-dimensional character building program. But yeah, no specific reasons. I like fish. I used to work at an aquarium. Hey.
Well, I could talk to you two all day. I could look at what's behind your head all day. I would say you have the most impressive apartments, decor, except for our mutual friend Signutron, who has you beat a little bit because he's got some other great stuff. But
you're not seeing the rest of the walls. It's pretty
cool. Okay, well, maybe your time.
But Sig is awesome. I don't doubt he's got a ton of awesome.
Yeah,
shit.
But Clint, if you go to the systemsin.com, there's some limited edition T-shirts to help finance the new video. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, they're only up for 2 weeks and then they are gone forever. And you pick up the new album, there's Dry Blood on Blu-ray, DVD, and a lot of other neat merch on there. And you can also watch the new music videos. There's a video link right at the top of the website. So if you want to see all the music videos, it's right there.
And we'll have a link. We'll have a link on this show. And if it's okay with you, if I have your permission, I'd like to play, at least for the radio broadcast and the podcast, the title track so people can hear what you got going on. Of Once Upon a Second Act, and Clint, it's been great. I definitely want to have you back and talk to you soon when you're in your third act, your fourth act, your fifth act, and however many other acts that you have.
Definitely before you tour.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on, Mark, and thank you, Nicole, for setting this up and for coming.
Of course.
Great talking to you both. And thanks.
ClintCarney.com as well, and social media. It's all. It's all Systems In, or is it Clint Carney, or is it both?
Yeah, both.
And Nicole is Nicole Six Books on Instagram. Is that correct?
I am, and I have deleted some people off of my Facebook, so you can go to Nicole H6 on my Facebook, and I got like 20 more slots left before I'm at 5,000, but I can add some people now.
Right, but buy one of the limited edition Systems In shirts. That'll give you priority to add Nicole Six on Facebook.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, well, let's cross promote. And and Dark Marcho on all social media, Goth Comedian on all social media. Everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
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 weight of years falls on us all, until reflections tell the lie of who we are, when what we were will no longer live in light. My heart still burns more than you know, sacred in its blasphemy. I feel upon a second act was where our story came alive, and we emerged out from the ash. So far, so good, so we survive. My heart still burns more than you know, sacred in its blasphemy. I feel a lie.